This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 8, Episode 11. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Hello there, kids.
And we also, that's also Canada Earth. And we're joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Just also on Earth. Going well. So I first question I have, most important breaking question, like I can't, you know, we have to know is how are the Mariners doing?
You know, they're sort of living by their motto, which is it can never be easy. And if it is, we're just going to counterbalance with extremely difficult. So
like Toronto. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. As we sit, it is 2-2 in the best of five. It is returning to Seattle for the ultimate game in the ALDS.
Oh, so they're going to game five. They're not playing today.
No, it should be tomorrow. I believe it is 1 p.m. Pacific.
Okay.
And they're playing it that early because they want to give whichever team wins time to get to Toronto to play on Sunday night.
Hmm. Really?
Yep. Whoever wins that series will be visiting Toronto for the American League Championship Series on Sunday night.
That's if we let them across the border, of course.
Well, you know. Coming up isn't the problem.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, that's true. That's true. Or buying tickets isn't the problem. Okay, well, glad that's settled, because we could, this podcast might be over next week. We don't know for sure, but, you know, just stay tuned.
Scorched earth, folks.
Yeah, watch your sports scores for the next couple of days.
I think Jaime, if it's the Mariners and the Blue Jays, we have to come up with a clever bet that we can do. Like, the loser has to go to the mall wearing, like, a Ferengi head or something. Man. We'll have to think of a really good Spotcast-themed bad payoff for whoever loses.
Okay.
Time to consider, because it's... For folks who didn't follow, they were back-to-back games where each team just blew out the other. So we had our turn first, and then they had theirs, and you just roll the dice and see what happens in these games.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Seattle does it very much like Toronto does it. Never easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Toronto did pretty well in the first series. They just played against New York, but we'll see. They got up by the skin of their teeth, too, though, I think.
Yep. The Yankees lose. Yay, the Yankees lose.
All righty. Well, let's move on to the headlines, since there's not much fact check from last week. So off you go.
All right. Well, I hadn't heard about this, and I don't know if either of you had heard about this as well. But apparently earlier this year, there was some discussion that they had gone, I guess this is producer Michael Sussman and actor Scott Bakula, he of Star Trek Enterprise fame, had gone to Paramount and pitched a new spinoff for Star Trek Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be called Star Trek United. And this week on the podcast for Trek Movie, which is a great website, they interviewed Sussman, and he gave them a little bit of detail on what was going to be in this proposed sequel series on Paramount Plus. Apparently, it was supposed to be about an older Captain Archer, who was, as we glimpsed in the fourth season of Enterprise, goes on to become the president of Starfleet. And, or I guess, is it Starfleet or is it
Federation, I think.
Federation, yeah,
you're right. Did we see the future where he's founding the Federation with the Vulcans and the Andorians and maybe Tellarites. I forget that exact episode.
So I guess it was going to follow him in his presidency era. And Sussman said it was somewhat akin to Andor, a political thriller set on Earth, but, you know, tying into all these, you know, the political machinations of the creation of the Federation. And actually sounds pretty interesting. And apparently they pitched this to Paramount at a time when Paramount was getting ready to for the sale to Skydance, and they said, no, no, we're cutting back right now. We're not interested right now. And now that it's been sold and the new ownership at Skydance has said, we want to really reinvest in streaming, and there's only two existing Star Trek series, which is Strange New Worlds, which we know only has a season and a half to go, and the upcoming Starfleet Academy series. It's possible that they could revive this, but I don't know. I can't say I love the idea of like a grounded Star Trek series, as in like there's no spaceships, there's no space, it's all on Earth, but I do think that there is a lot to explore in that era. They mentioned in this piece that the other thing they could explore is the first Romulan Federation War, which we don't know a lot about. It was kind of missing from the window of time. So,
well, when they created a neutral zone and all that?
Yeah. Like the first, because the first time that we meet the Romulans, that's the original series, and they say basically, nobody's seen these guys in, you know, forever, right?
Yeah.
So the idea would be this takes you back to, you know, the where and why and how of all that, which is an interesting era to explore. Prequel problems aside, I think that could be really interesting. I don't know. This sounds like a pretty decent pitch to me. And I mean, obviously Scott Bakula was good as Archer. What do you guys think of the idea of Star Trek United?
Well, sounds okay, but I don't know. The Enterprise kind of put a bad taste in most people's mouths, so it's going to be hard to sort of, if people are remembering that, they may not want to come back to it, right? But I mean, Star Trek's fun. It's good to have it, you know. It's sort of the ideal version of sci-fi as opposed to, you know, Star Wars, which is kind of like
wars.
Well, it's wars, but no, Star Wars is kind of, what do you call it, like steampunk kind of, you know, sci-fi.
Yeah, it's a little more energetic. What do you think, Jaime?
Yeah, it's an idea that I think would be interesting, you know, kind of a West Wing, but Archer, you know.
And Deep Space Nine, the first couple of seasons, was kind of not really going anywhere, right?
It was, but then I think if you ask any Deep Space Nine fan, and all three of us are, those first couple of seasons aren't the best of it either.
Right.
Yeah. I think the thing that they would definitely have to do, which would blow people's minds, is just do the somehow Trip Tucker returned, you know, because like, okay, sure. Right. So what we have seen canonically, I think, is spoilers here for the next two, like series finale here, info, you know, Trip Tucker sacrificing himself is what Commander Riker sees in the holodeck. But I mean, he saw what he needed to see and he moved on with his life. What he didn't see was, you got to flip that laser disc over and there's side two. He didn't see, oh, it turns out that, you know, Trip was beamed out by Q or something.
At the last minute, yeah.
Yeah, just make it up. It's like, oh, we thought Trip was dead. It's like, no, bro, they thought he was dead. And then 6 months later, he showed up. They're, oh, okay, cool. Bad your back, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody just wants to see what Jolene Blaylock or Jolene looks like now. She'd be a hot returning character too. I think it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do next with Star Trek. We know obviously that Academy's coming, but then there's a big question mark, and we know that the 60th anniversary is next year. It does seem strange that there's neither a movie nor a show timed for next fall when the 60th anniversary occurs, but who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us.
And can only hope.
That's the dream. All right. Okay. Good news and bad news. The good news is Hulu is coming to Canada finally. The bad news is they're going to make you pay more for it. Okay. So we had talked about this on a previous episode that they were going to eliminate the branding of Star, which is what they do internationally for Disney Plus. They are going to spread Hulu out as the brand that is within Disney Plus that has sort of the more mature content and different content. So there will be no more Star on your Canadian Disney Plus. They also announced this week that they are going to jack their prices by up to $3 starting in November. For the privilege of, for somebody having to go in and take all the Star logos off and put Hulu on, that apparently required them dinging you for another $3 a month if you are getting the different packages. So the standard high def pack is going up by $3 to $15.99. The 4K package is going up by $1, so it's $16.99 per month. And then if you want the one with ads, it's still $8.99 a month. So cool. Thank you. May I have another?
Maybe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. May I have another? I mean, I don't really care what they brand things. I do care when they start charging us more for things. I mean, really, at this point, I already have the 4K package, so we're talking about $12 a year. It's not the end of the world, but it does, you know, obviously it's a slippery slope. It's $12 a year and then $12 a year and $12 a year. Next thing you know, you're paying more and more.
Cable prices, yeah.
Yeah. So.
So do we, is all the Hulu stuff come through to us as Star, or do we get some of it on Crave and things like that?
No, it's basically anything that's branded as Star is Hulu stuff, but also I don't think they're licensing any Hulu stuff outside of that, but I can't be sure. Now that you mention it, I seem to recall there being a couple of things that may have popped up on other services, but, yeah, I mean, I really don't care. They could call it, you know, banana pants. I don't really care. I want the shows. But I mean, right now, when we get like Futurama, it says Star before it's starting, even though every promotion for it on YouTube and everything else says Hulu, right? Like it makes sense to harmonize the brands. But at this point, even calling it Hulu is a waste of time. Like nobody cares. Just put it on your service. Like, you know, I guess they want the brand reputation. It's one of the reasons why they bought Fox. They got like FXX, which is like a boutique brand. So they can say FXX and then or FX. And you get the Aliens and you get the Fargos and you get stuff like that. But I mean, really, I don't really care what label you put on as long as you give it to me and please stop charging me more for it.
Yeah.
Jaime, I don't know if you've seen anything. I didn't see any follow-ups that said anything about the American version of this. I don't know if they're dinging you as well.
Yeah, the price increase came just as Jimmy Kimmel was going back on ABC. I was like, are you serious? Like,
Timing-wise, yeah.
To make up for all the people who dropped it?
It's like, yeah, you got to do that, you know, in a sneaky sandwich, right? And maybe they were going to say, hey, you know, nobody will notice the price increase story because the big story would be Jimmy Kimmel. Same reason when, you know, spoilers to all you nefarious evildoer, you know, business types out there. I'm not saying you should lay off all your people, but if you're going to, you do it during an Apple event.
Right? Yeah.
You do it on, we're coming up on a holiday on Monday. So this Friday, Friday afternoon is a really good time, a 3-day weekend to lay out.
Wait, you're celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving on Monday?
You know, or it could be Indigenous People Day, or if your calendar is a little outdated, you might say Columbus Day.
Oh, Columbus Day. Okay, because it's our Thanksgiving this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I see that on my calendar. My calendar is a fascinating land of contrast, and then I see it says Columbus Day, the older variant, but it does say Thanksgiving Day CA, and you just have to know that's not California.
Okay. Well, it could be. You never know, right?
Hey, if the California people want turkey, that's fine. We'll give it to them.
But isn't Columbus one of those names like Dundas and Ryerson that needs to be corrected?
Yeah, a lot of people have stopped, I think, doing Columbus Day, although given the political temperature in the States, maybe people are bringing it back out of spite.
They're bringing it back, yeah.
Yeah, I think the idea
can it
was
be
that
Leif
they,
Erickson Day or something like that?
Yeah, really. Let's get really old school about it. But I think a lot of people have sort of disavowed the whole Columbus thing with the colonialism and the killing of Indigenous people and all that stuff.
Right.
And on that note, you're up, Jaime.
Let's head it over to Dan.
On that note, as we seamlessly transition into a positive thing, California law is going to force Netflix, Hulu, and basically everybody else that does streaming to turn down the ad volumes. So if you have dealt with any of these things, and actually in your previous article, I noticed, Jonathan, that the ad sponsored prices were staying the same. So they're changing the delta between completely ad free, that's getting more expensive, but they're leaving as is the ad supported models. But a real common problem is you're watching a show, and especially with shows the way they're mixed nowadays, you got to crank up your TV to hear what everybody's saying, right? Mm. Right? It was like staring directly at Christopher Nolan in the eyes right now. And then, you know, if you're watching on something that has ads, there's probably, you know, Crazy Larry's, you know, House of Appliances, or he's selling used cars or whatever, and it is 10 times higher in volume. And this article says, like, hey, you know, there was some pushback on this law from like Disney and et cetera. Like, oh, the streaming ads come from multiple sources, hard to control. I want to put the kibosh on that. As a technologist here, it is absolutely trivial in this age of beefy machines, AI, all of these things to just control the signal waveform. That's all sound is, right? So it's a very trivial thing for them to control. Hey, what's the current volume set for this stream? Great. Clamp on the high end, on the low end, the volume for this this ad. Easy. And if they don't want to do it, I'm going to turn, metaphorically speaking, and look directly in the eyes of the people that make sound systems and TVs. I'm like, you all could just do that for people. Nobody likes their Black Friday cheap TV blasting their ears when they're falling asleep on the couch, right? Why don't you do this digital signals processing? You don't even need a chip anymore. It's all in software. And you just slap a logo on there, like, won't blast your ear, won't blast your earballs. There you go, earballs. Won't blast your ears. Won't blast your eyes, your ears, any combination of your body with ads. And it'd be, you know, something helpful. It's nuts. In 2025, you're like, oh, it's too hard to change the volume. I'm like, it's not hard at all. It's very easy.
It's the typical problem with TV and radio as well, is the volume of ads. But I thought when I read this, I thought they were turning down the number of ads you would see in a show.
That's the dream, but no way.
Okay. All right.
At least give choice. I do appreciate when some of these streaming services will give you, like, do you want to watch this ad or that ad? And I'm like, all right, this is definitely Star Trek Discovery, choose your pain kind of moment. But but
there are four lights.
Exactly. But I'm like, you know what? I might as well feed the algorithms and tell them this one here is less offensive. Not better. Less offensive.
It's a fine line, but an important one.
So this is a follow-up from last week's discussion about AI, but what's her name, Tilly Woodman or something like that?
The AI woman, yes.
The AI entity actress.
Tilly Norwood, I think?
Tilly Norwood, yeah, that's it. Thank you. They had Justine Bateman on a TV show. She's actor, director, long-suffering TV sister of Alex P. Keaton, the original Republican.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was talking about the whole how SAG-AFTRA feels about the AI entities, and she kind of clarified the fact that the agreement didn't say that they wouldn't have AI actors. It just sort of it was around how they would have them in there. And so she mentioned that, which I thought was interesting, was this Credo 23 stamp that creators are able to put on their content. What happens is when you post your content, it goes over to this Credo thing. And if it's not AI generated, you're allowed to sign it with this Credo 23 thing, which, you know, users can then click on and go back and read the sort of behind the scenes thing that it's not including AI. So there was another one too, I think it was called a CR stamp or something like that, that I heard about the other day, that is a similar kind of vehicle that artists will be able to put on their work to show that it's not involving any sort of artificial intelligence or LLM kind of stuff, right? So, which is really getting really hard to tell these days, right?
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't mind if that was at least put on Front Street, that we kind of know what we're getting, but...
Yeah, it's like the comic review stamp that sort of appeared in the 70s and 80s, right?
The comics code, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So it sort of legitimizes or shows a stamp of approval, and it's done through an algorithm, ironically. So if there's any kind of if it senses any kind of AI or you know, even in the writing or acting or create or you know, visual creativity, this thing will not appear. And if you, she was sort of saying, like, if somebody takes an image and they strip out the metadata, because you can strip out the metadata that sort of shows how it was created, it'll still kind of somehow recognize, and it won't, that image won't be able to put the stamp on, you know, without like proving, you won't be able to hack the logic to get it to let you put the stamp on, because it's sort of handled by a third party agency anyway. So an interesting interview, but you know, if you're interested, I've got the link here for the whole interview, where she talks about the other stuff we talked about, the AI acting and Tilly Norwood. But it, I thought the interesting takeaway for me was the Credo stamp, Credo 23.
Yeah. Cool. All right. New TV show alert. So even though Netflix brought you Riverdale, which is the sort of modern interpretation of Archie, and then brought you Sabrina, the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is, again, a modern reinvention of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, there's a new Archie series coming to Disney Plus. So the show is called Afterlife with Archie. This is a comic that's existed for a number of years, and it is kind of like Marvel Zombies, but with Archie, if that makes sense to anyone. It's basically like you're in the town of Riverdale, just like you would be in an Archie comic, but it's turned into this sort of post-apocalyptic hellscape with zombies that attack people. And I've only ever read, I think, one copy of it. I'm not a huge horror buff, so it wasn't for me, but it is a popular book, and it's a popular interpretation there. Over the past few years, I will give massive credit to the people who run Archie Comics. They've really kind of just done fun stuff with the book. They did sort of this what if story where what if Archie had died. They did this. They've done the, like, what if he'd married Veronica? What if he'd married Betty? They've done, you know, different characters. Like, they really have sort of pushed the envelope a little bit. This was, I thought, one of the weirder tangents that they sort of went on. But again, I took it as just sort of like, well, it's, you know, it's a fun idea. But, you know, who'd really want that? Well, apparently, the people at Disney Plus want that. So, yeah, we're getting Archie with zombies. Any appeal in an Archie zombie show? Did you guys watch Riverdale or Sabrina? I must admit, I had them on my radar, and I never really got around to either one of them.
So I did. I mean, I read a ton of Archie because it was always in the house, right? Because my sisters would bring it home or whatever, and you know, everybody loved Jughead. Everybody hated Reggie. You know,
oh yeah, absolutely.
And Veronica and Betty were always not Veronica and Betty. Yeah,
yep,
I'm thinking. Trying not to get confused with Veronica and Wilma, right? Betty and Wilma.
Betty and Wilma, yeah.
But I never did get in. And I live in Riverdale, Toronto, like that's the neighborhood I live in. But I've never actually gotten, and like Riverdale High is just down the road from me, literally. But I never really got into Riverdale, and I thought, yeah, same sort of thing. I thought about watching it. I did watch Sabrina. I think I'm sort of halfway through season two or three, whatever the latest season is. I'm halfway through it. It's a bit like Wednesday in a sense, but you know,
but a little darker. It seems like, from what I've seen, it seems a little bit edgier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can be, but it's got the dynamic between the two aunts and Sabrina and but it's not like the Sabrina. You remember the TV show Sabrina with the cat?
Oh yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah. The cat was like a whole character, right? The guy from Kit or whatever.
Is that a different actor? I don't know if he did the voice for that one. I'm not sure.
Or was it the guy, the Jeffrey guy from Star Trek that keeps doing all the voices of the computers?
Yeah, it could be.
It was something like that. But anyway, yeah, and that was a goofy show. And and it's actually pretty good. I mean, like I said, it's production wise, it's like Wednesday in that sense is what I meant, right? So it is entertaining, right? And I do know that I do get the impression that Riverdale was entertaining too, but it was sort of, it's also like the new Fresh Prince. I haven't watched that either. So, you know, sort of like redoing the, You know, ever since Winnie the Pooh.
Do we need more a dark twist on ..
Well, I was going to say, ever since Winnie the Pooh kind of went dark, you know.
Well, more public domain stuff. We've got a dark Winnie the Pooh. We've got a dark Steamboat Willie. It's going to be a fun decade of things coming out of copyright protection. Jaime, how about you?
Yeah, this one might be interesting to look at, and it's definitely in line with the wild stuff that you mentioned. I think we've talked about Archie versus Predator, or the Predator, before.
Yep, they did Archie and the Punisher, Archie and Predator, all kinds of
Archie
stuff.
Archie and Punisher, yeah. So it's kind of wild that they did have the sort of split between the younger reader books. You know, if you pay attention in the grocery checkout line, you might see the little like Archie's Digest, Archie's Double Digest, sort of like kind of more kid friendly or ologies friendly. And then you have, you know, Afterlife with Archie, you know, where it's like zombie themed. So kind of fascinating that, I mean, they've been doing it for so long. It's clearly a winning combo for them. Otherwise they would have just stopped. It would have been a fad.
Yeah. It's interesting to me though. Obviously we've seen this happen before with other properties where, you know, they end up with different distributors, but it is interesting that they are going to be on Disney Plus given the success that they've had in this relationship between Netflix and the Archie Comics publishers. So yeah, that's I think the thing that like caught me most off guard was like, but aren't you guys, don't you guys do your thing together? Like, what, is there a breakup? Did I miss a memo?
Yeah, the whole rights thing gets kind of fascinating, doesn't it? Everybody's kind of like pulling back stuff that they think is sort of crown jewels, and then sort of liberally re-licensing to other folks things that they're like, all right, we squeezed all the juice out of this one.
Yeah, you can have it now. We're done.
Cool. Okay, Hammy, you're up.
Yeah, we got a actual trailer here for, as the nice people at The Verge say, HBO's next Game of Thrones spinoff that premieres January 18th. That is A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Mm.
Another one of those based on a sort of side story or history kind of book, apparently based on the Tales of Duncan Egg, set 100 years, I think is what the trailer says, 100 years before the Game of Thrones main series. I saw the trailer for this one, and I was a little surprised that it's kind of more lighthearted. I thought it'd be a little bit darker, like Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon, and this one is kind of more fun, I think, is the vibe I got from it.
Yeah, it does look a little brighter, especially given that we're about to go into next year where all heck is going to break loose on House of the Dragon, because it's going to be pretty much nonstop bloodbath. So maybe that's deliberate. But this is it looks good and I'm excited about it, but it's also like, what could possibly go wrong from having a prequel? Like, it's another prequel set in a completely different time period from the other prequel that they're doing to Game of Thrones. Did they not learn anything from all the other franchises that have gone prequel heavy, that like eventually you tie yourself in knots? I'm excited for it, but also I'm kind of like, I hope they don't make things worse, you know? Although, having watched the last episode of Game of Thrones, I'm not sure worse is possible, but yeah.
Yeah, what was the last, the thing with the girls? The young girl that was, I thought it was Game of Thrones, but it wasn't so good.
House of the Dragon?
No, not that one. It was the other one.
The one with the girl.
Are we talking about a character, an actor?
Yeah, got that Irish actor in it. Irish Scottish actress in it. House of the Dragon is the one with Matt Smith, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So not that one.
Matt Smith and his awesome blonde hair wigs.
Yeah. Not that one. I'll kind of circle back on it.
Right.
Rose somebody, I think was the name of the, not Rose Byrne. What's it called? We talked about it many, many times on the show, but I just thought it wasn't that great a series after all. Anyway, what else you got for us, Jaime?
We have Apple TV Plus coming November 7th. Did you like Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad? Did you like Rhea Seehorn? Guess what? You've got little brain burp there. You've got Vince Gilligan and Rhea Seehorn starring in this. Like, they haven't even told us what's going on other than this. You know, previous teaser was her like in a office setting, I think, like you have the donuts or cookies. I forget which bakery item it was. And she just starts licking all of them, right? And then here she is like on the phone and he's like, what's going on? Everything's crazy. And it's like, I think it may be you because it looks like there's a press conference going on and they're talking directly to you. Like, that's nuts. So who knows what's going on here? Seems like it could be that, you know, interesting sci-fi kind of thing that Apple TV Plus likes to do, but with, you know, great actress like Rhea Seehorn and a really great creator like Vince Gilligan.
Yeah, I mean, the ingredients are there for sure. I think it's one of the biggest travesties of the last decade that Rhea Seehorn didn't win an Emmy Award for her performance as Kim Wexler. She was incredible on that show, like a real revelation to me. I'd seen her in a couple of things, but I really wasn't familiar, and she blew my doors off. I thought she was amazing in Better Call Saul. And I mean, Vince Gilligan hasn't made a bad turn in ever. So... Like, I think I would watch this whether or not it was a genre show, whether or not, like, I would just, if you told me the ingredients, I would be like, let's cook it up and serve it. I'm in. So, but you're right, Jaime. It's a bit of a question mark show. People aren't really sure if it's a genre show. They aren't sure if it's a, you know, like a mystery crime show. It's just kind of a little bit of a puzzle box, which, I mean, that's kind of what we got with, you know, when before Severance dropped, right? It was like a little bit of like, what is this show? And it turned out to be something amazing. So very cool.
Yep. All right. Well, that takes us to the main part of the show where we talk about something special, usually Star Trek related, but this time we don't have any Star Trek, so we're going to talk about Peacemaker's finale, season two finale.
Not finale.
Peacemaker's penultimate episode towards the finale.
The last but one supper.
The last but one. Like a Keith in the Night, and then we'll talk about the last but two?
Yep.
For Gen V, but yeah, so back to Like a Keith in the Night.
Yeah, I mean, this was a roller coaster of an episode. It started out really, 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 really funny with Harcourt basically pointing out to Peacemaker, did you not notice the giant, the copies of Mein Kampf on every desk and the giant mural of Hitler on the wall? That was pretty hilarious. I heard a clip of an interview with James Gunn this week from the podcast that they do where he said, yeah, we had a third joke in there to hammer home how oblivious Chris is, where we panned over to the copy machine and Harcourt says, and didn't you notice the weird mustaches and the three guys all have Hitler mustaches? I was like, it's a shame that didn't make it. 'Cause that's pretty funny. But yeah, basically this is the sort of the comeuppance after last week where, you know, they realize that they are in the bad place and this world is messed. And, you know, when last we left, Adebayo was running down the street, trying not to get, you know, attacked by a mob of white people. We had, who else was in trouble there? Oh yeah. 'Cause they were in the Argus office, Chris and Harcourt were in the Argus office, and they had to, you know, start this episode by basically like shooting their way out the door and trying to get out. And, yeah, I mean, this was a pretty, pretty propulsive episode where, you know, everybody's trying to get back together. They're trying to sort of figure out what to do. You know, we get this really sort of sweet moment where, you know, Chris chooses his Harcourt over the you know, what do they call it? Hardcourt? Light Court? I think they've been calling her Light Court. So, you know, we see that. We also see Judo Master comes and rescues Adebayo by killing a swimming pool full of people. That was pretty dark. And then, you know, basically it's the whole episode is sort of culminating with them all coming together and, you know, they end up going back to Peacemaker's quote unquote father's house. His father from this dimension, and seems like it's all going to work out. You know, their Augie is very reasonable, even though the Keith from that dimension is furious that Peacemaker killed their version of Peacemaker. And then, of course...
By accident, of course. Yeah.
But then, of course, Adrian shows up and puts a bullet through Augie's head. And all hell breaks loose. The scene where they're all battling against Keith and he's trying to kill everybody and they're all trying to kill him, and then Chris like breaks. And, you know, we talked about how, you know, we've been impressed or enjoying the performances of John Cena as Chris this year, and the emotion in his voice when he's like, when he just screams stop. As the rest of the gang are basically murdering his brother in front of him was heartbreaking. Like, that was a really good performance. And of course they decide to head back to their dimension. They leave the version of Keith, you know, on the floor there. Hopefully, you know, Chris hopes he lives. Everyone else hopes he dies. And then of course, Harcourt is like, I can't have you coming after him, and is about to murder the guy, but then gets interrupted, so he lives. They all end up back in the normal dimension, of course, and that's where they find themselves surrounded by Argus, and you know, Chris basically throws himself on the sword for the rest of the team. This was both a action-packed and also pretty heart-rending show. And again, this is just the penultimate episode, and in that same interview I saw with James Gunn, he was talking about how he thinks that episode 8 is the best episode that they've done yet. And he said it was the episode that he used to pitch his job as the head of DC content with the
this senior... is episode 7 though, right?
I'm telling you, he's setting up for episode 8. Oh, he says episode 8, which is coming up, which he both wrote and directed. He said when he was pitching to get the job as the person to run DC Studios, that was what he used as part of his pitch, was here's what I'm doing in episode 8. And they were so impressed with episode 8 that he got the green light to become the big guy behind all the DC stuff. So sounds like it's going to be a real banger, and this episode definitely sets the stage for like, wow, like where are we now?
Yeah, no, it blows up real good.
Yeah, I mean, what'd you think?
Yeah, I really did appreciate the whole notion that Peacemaker, you know, John Cena is like, the problem is me.
Yeah,
I am the commonality in all of this pain that's happening across dimensions. That was pretty. You know, it is kind of a pew 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 kind of heavy episode, right? There's a lot of that that happens here. There's a fair amount of comedy, like when Harcourt and Chris try to escape, and you know, he activates his little jetpack, and yeah, they kind of just smash their way through and into a car, and it's like less cool than it would normally be in a superhero thing, right? And then to have it be just as broad and real, and you're hit with you know, with Augie just getting taken out by Vigilante, but it's like, wait, you know, Vigilante like didn't really know what was going on, right? He just assumed, hey, there's a bad guy in our universe. He seems to be the head honcho here. I see my friends tied up. Like, he put two and two together and accidentally got the wrong result. But it wasn't unreasonable from his perspective. It was unfortunate and the wrong decision to make. But for the wrong outcome. But you could certainly say, like, yeah, that was pretty reasonable, right? You would assume that your friends are being held hostage and you're coming in to save the day.
I forgot to mention the scenes with Economos begging Eagly to rescue him and Eagly ignoring him, which was also very, very high humor in an otherwise pretty pew pew episode.
Yeah, it was interesting that I thought that Augie, is that the dad's name?
Yeah.
Yeah, that he didn't seem to be a Nazi. Right.
Well, he was offended, right? When he says, you know, he's like, is your world perfect? My world's not perfect. I'm not that person, but I do what I can within the system that's built around me. It's a pretty, I mean, again, for a stupid show, it's really smart sometimes. It really is. You know, this show can be both absolutely puerile and pretty, pretty heartfelt at the same time. I mean, this is what James Gunn does, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm such a fan of this show. I am all in, and I just cannot wait to see how they land this plane. And really, what I think I'm most curious about to watch in the finale is this the quote-unquote end? Are they going to do more Peacemaker? Is this going to set Peacemaker up to be more part of the DC Universe? Is Peacemaker going to die? Like, what's the conclusion? I mean, for the two of you, what's the satisfying conclusion to this particular season? I mean, Chris is right. He's the problem. He's the common denominator in all this chaos. So, yeah, what's a good ending for all this?
Oh, I don't know where this particular season ends, but I do think it could circle back onto a third season at least.
Yeah,
I don't think it's the end, but and yeah, like you said, he might have a bigger role in the DCU movies, right?
Yeah, I mean they're gluing them all together. Jaime, what do you want to see this land? How do they land this plane?
You know, I was thinking they were going to end on maybe like a semi cliffhanger, but you don't really have a cliffhanger in season one. Like it felt reasonably wrapped up, and then we saw the fallout at the beginning of season two. So I guess they could land a pretty satisfying closure to this story, but leave things open for things to have more ramification. What's going on, right? Like they have reintroduced, you know, Lex Luthor and Luthor's minion, who there's that maybe pre-credits, post-credits scene where he's like, hey, I've got access to the computer. You can turn around if you want, but I'm going to go visit the hub.
that was really funny.
no shame there. It's just like, I'm just going to do this. You do whatever, whether you're there or not, I don't care. I'm going to make use of this computer and this internet.
Yeah. I liked when he tried to blackmail the Argus team. He's trying to blackmail Flag Senior and was just like, nope, that's not a thing. Like, okay, I guess I'll, like, he basically says, like, do you want me to tell Luther you're not his guy? And he's like, nope, I'm good. I'll help you. It's always fun to watch people who think they have the upper hand get the hand slapped across their face. Yeah, again, it continues to be an absolutely compelling show. Like I said, it's one of the smartest, stupid shows I've ever seen.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care. Or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour. Plus, access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's-level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
Now, back to the show.
Cool, let's move on to Gen V.
Yeah. So this is episode 6 of an 8-episode series, Cooking Lessons. This felt like a bit of a, they definitely slowed the pace down a lot, right? So last week was, you know, they try and break their friend out of jail. They end up getting caught. They're trying to get back out of jail. We see, we finally, you know, get to meet Marie's sister. And then there's this like, holy moly moment of, you know, she actually is dead, but then she comes back to life thanks to Marie. This episode definitely like slowed things down a fair bit, a lot more exposition, but it definitely, and Jaime, small spoilers for you, buddy, but this episode really ties strongly back into the larger...
It does tie the room together really
the
well.
The boys plot. Yeah, absolutely. It really ties the knot a little bit with the boys plot line of a lot of different people are trying to figure out how to stop Homelander. Here we get the return of a character from The Boys who, you know, pops up on the scene and basically says, you know, hey, here's a bunch of plot info that you need on where we're at and what you can do and how you can help stop Homelander. And we finally get a really good sense of how exactly Cypher is Cypher is doing with that burned out, you know, half dead person in a hyperbaric chamber in his living room too. So yeah, this was
there's a bit of a reveal there for sure.
Yeah. So this one was definitely very like advanced the plot, but a little bit lighter on the pupils, although there was a pretty good fight scene between, the Viking character that popped up earlier in the season that was beating everybody up in the training room, comes back. And so that scene definitely had some action in it and was a pretty gory scene.
And it's the Kool-Aid man busting through the wall too.
Yeah. but yeah, it definitely, you know, we've sort of talked about like how this all fits in, you know, is this the second and final season? Are they going to do more? Where does it fit in the larger scheme? But I really got to be honest, like if you're a fan of the boys and you want to get hyped up and teed up for the upcoming final season, like we're getting close to like, you really got to watch this because a lot of crossover characters, a lot of plot momentum from The Boys carries into this. It's really kind of gone from a side project to like a, you know, really close side project.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like if Marie shows up in season 5 or whatever of The Boys without having watched this, it might be a little confusing, right? So
yeah, and again, like they're definitely overlapping characters. We saw some familiar faces last week. We saw more familiar faces this week from like we're straight from The Boys, plot points taken straight from The Boys. As I say, it's definitely become, if you want the full picture, you're probably really well served to make the time for this show. It's not like it's in the same universe, but it really doesn't matter. It matters. This stuff that they're revealing now, it really kind of matters. And it'll be interesting to see 2 more episodes. I just like we talked about with Peacemaker, it'll be interesting to see how they land this plane. I would imagine the logical place to land it is completely setting up the next season of The Boys. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw these characters in the final season of The Boys, and I wouldn't be surprised that if they are going to do a third season, it's about the fallout from the next season of The Boys, not necessarily just what we see here, right?
Yeah, no, it was a good episode. I mean, like you said, filled in a lot of bugs. But I mean, it's sort of the whole gist of the cooking lessons thing is that, forgotten the guy's father's name, he likes to cook while he explains things, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, so... That's where that thing came from. And so, yeah, it is kind of a fill in the blanks or, you know, chop up all the, prepare all the ingredients for next week kind of thing show for sure. Yeah. And we do find out what the project, is it Omega they call it? What do they call the? Secret program.
What did they call that? Yes. That secret project.
Yeah. Omega or whatever. Anyway. But yeah, we do find out what the gist of it is, and that you know, that Marie was a sort of an outlier result of a failed program.
No, Odessa.
Odessa, yeah. And that lines her up with the fate that we predicted in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
Yeah, but we didn't make the connection about the burned out dude. We were speculating who it might be, but it turned out to be somebody completely different.
Yeah,
I mean they've been laying the seeds. As a writer, you probably should have made a good educated guess, because they've been laying the seeds in the previews and you know, even some of the parts where they talk about who that person is, you know.
Yeah, I must say though, I'm curious to see what they do with that. I'm not sure that we're wrong about the fact that person may be providing Cypher with his powers.
True.
But we weren't sure if that was, you know, again, we talked about it being his actual dad, but was like, keep him alive. Here in this episode, we definitely get a lot more clarity on A, who it is, and B, what their dynamic is, which is not healthy. So yeah. It'll be good to see how that moves forward now that we kind of know what we're dealing with. Jaime, are you still with us? Or have you just been plugging your ears the whole time?
Just kind of unfocusing my eyes,
and going la, to your la, happy la, place.
La. Just letting just letting the words pass through.
have you been moving forward with watching the first season of the show?
No, it's something we're gonna have to get around to. I'm sure, as you're all talking about, like, I'm sure that the upcoming season of The Boys will have additional flavor enhancement from knowing the content from this series, but I just won't have that part, I think.
Yeah.
Timing wise.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have time if you're interested. I mean, two seasons, 16 episodes. It's not a major commitment if people do want to catch up. But yeah, the first season it's got some tangential links, but the second season feels like a strong sort of shadow prequel to the final season of The Boys. So it'll definitely be a little extra flavor for the people that have the time to sit down and take in another show.
Mm-hmm. By the way, what you can't see on the notes here is on the Slack channel. I just sent Jaime a picture of a round object that says "to it" on it. So he's got a round to it.
There you go.
Enjoy your to it.
Yeah. Now you have no excuse. All right. Well, should we move on to the watch list?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, let's do that. So I got a bunch of stuff here. So I'm going to hog the time and go up here. So as you know, I'm sort of focused on Vision Pro. I spend a lot of time on it. I use it as my main monitor. I watch a lot of my TV shows with it. But last week Apple introduced another episode in their, what they're calling the Elevated series. This is season one, episode two. It's called Maine. And the first Elevated one was about hot air balloons in somewhere in Europe. And that was a really amazing thing to sort of, you know, you get the feeling of being in a hot air balloon, but this one is all drone footage and it talks about Maine, which is literally a 10 to 15 minute drive to Jonathan's house.
That's true. I guess it depends which part of Maine they're looking at, but yes.
Well, it's a big state, but I mean, but if you look at the map, like if you look at Canada kind of goes up the St. Lawrence and then it drops down. Mm-hmm. And where it drops down, the US has Maine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's basically shot in the height of fall. So there's all the, you know, the color of the leaves and stuff like that, which is probably over for you now and where you are. Have leaves on your trees there, John? Or?
We do. Yeah, actually, it's still quite pretty here. Today was actually the first day this fall that's actually felt seasonally appropriate. It was only about 12 degrees today Celsius, and but Monday it was still 30 degrees. So the trees are dropping leaves, but slowly.
Yeah, the trees are freaking out. They're like, some of our trees are half dead because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
but yeah, so the footage in this unfortunately you can only watch this episode on Vision Pro. Unfortunately, there's no, you know, regular version of it. But yeah, it is pretty spectacular. I mean, like when I saw it, when I watched it and it came out, I kind of just thought, yeah, this is like right across the street from Jonathan's house. So
yeah, I mean, I've heard more than a few people down here make the comment that Maine and New Brunswick, prior to some political upheaval, are essentially one united type of people, united very, very similar as far as our, ethos of living, as far as our, you know, topography. Like there are a lot of parallels between the upper northwest portion of, northeast portion of the United States and this area. obviously relations are strained a little bit right now, but you know, we're very alike, and it's a shame that you know, things are a little bit murky right now, but yeah, I mean, this part of the world is gorgeous. I'm extremely happy here. I'm extremely happy with you know, enjoying the region, and hopefully in the future, you know, Maine will be a little bit more accessible again. So
The next one is kind of a tech one, which kind of akin to more of more than just code, but in light of the conversations we've been having over the last three episodes with the losing access to Jimmy Kimmel, the whole dropping Disney as a service kind of thing, and Jonathan and Xavier's, you know, point that, you know, if you really want a movie, buy it on disc.
Yep.
That way you've got it. So this is an interesting video about a gentleman who's taken his family's, you know, favorite DVDs and Blu-rays and things like that, and basically ripped them, like converted them to like an I forget the format, but it's a movie format that is then able to stream to your Apple TV or whatever streaming device you use, whether it's a Google one or whatever. So it talks about getting a network error storage drive. And this particular one comes with, and he uses this software that works on Windows or Mac to convert the movies into a digital format right off the disk. And then you put it on your local area storage device. And then in this particular case, it uses a Ugreen drive, which is like a 4-bay drive. And it comes with a theater app that basically you can put it on your iPad, you can put it on your Apple TV, you can put it on your iPhone. And it will stream your own content from your own house to your own Apple TV as if you're like, and with a very similar interface, like we talked about last week, with same as what, you know, how you see it on Disney or Netflix or whatever. Like it's that same, or to Apple TV app. It's the same sort of interface. And he talks about how to change the metadata and make it do all kinds of wonderful things. But I just thought it was really, really interesting, because I mean, I've gotten rid of most of my DVDs, but I still have boxes of ones that I don't want to get rid of, and I have a whole drawer over there of things that I don't want to get rid of, but I've never digitized them, right? And mm-hmm. The idea is, like, you know, some of these movies you might have are not on streaming services, right? Anyway,
many of the things I have.
So this is a great, great little exercise. It's not a 5-minute fix, but. If you have a lot of discs and you want to have a subscription free, you know, access to it, like even me, like I have a lot of movies that I've now purchased on iTunes, but if my internet goes down, I don't have access to the content.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So, and my internet goes down once a week at least here, even, even still. So yeah, it's interesting video. So there's a link in the show notes for it. It's not very, very long. It's like a 10 minute video, I think. The other bit of a surprise for you guys today is I got to go see Ares 3D, Tron Ares in 3D IMAX today, this afternoon. It comes out tomorrow officially as we record, but, you know, they always have like shows the night before or day before. And so I went down to my favorite theater, which is the Scotiabank Theater, where we have the largest screen. The manager came out before and said it's the largest screen in the city, if not the Canada. But yeah, so I got to watch it, you know, with the Nine Inch Nails soundtrack. And I gotta say, it is visually stunning.
And the plot is?
The plot's reasonable, you know, I have a couple of big questions, but so what they've done is they've, like, the whole idea behind Tron the movie is that the programmer makes this world called the Grid, and then he eventually gets sucked into the video game and it gets trapped in there and has to try and get out, and all the sort of the light cycle motorcycles and those flying V things or whatever.
Yeah.
U-frames, H-frames, I don't know what they call them, but, and all that kind of stuff is in there. And so, you know, then we had the Tron Legacy where they brought it forward and somebody goes in to find, I forgot what the MacGuffin was for the last episode, last version. It was his son or something like that,
yep,
or whatever.
It was, yep.
And then he bumps into a version of his dad in there, the Jeff Bridges character. And then, so in this one, it's kind of like there's two, like the company that the Jeff Bridges side came from and a competitor are kind of working on the same sort of things to try, because of what happened in Tron Legacy, they're now using artificial intelligence and LLMs and general artificial intelligence, which is the real goal of all this stuff, by the way, which we don't have yet, but to build these sort of these systems. And of course, the one bad guy, his mother is Gillian Anderson and she's sort of thinking about the corporate thing. She's built up business and now the son is taking over. It's the guy who played, I forgot his name. Is the guy in X-Men, the younger X-Men, where he whips in and he can kind of, he can bounce around time.
Quicksilver. Yeah.
Quicksilver. Yeah. So that actor, he plays the bad dude. And so he's got, he's got all the military guys there and he basically has this big giant 3D printer that using lasers can build up these objects, and he builds up a tank, and then inside the tank is, our Jared Leto as Ares, talking about how, we can print this soldier and he can then fight your wars and whatever. And if he gets killed, we just print another one. Right. Kind of thing. But the Ares character he's the main character he's the master program in the grid world, right? I'm talking about the first 10 minutes of the movie, so I'm not really giving away a lot, right? But, because we were trying to figure out, okay, so how do they get these digital art, creations into the real world and create actual threats for people? Because, I mean, I just said, take off your 8 AR glasses and that's problem solved, right? But I mean, the big questions here for me are they have all these amazing flying devices, like flying machines and stuff like that, and light cycles and stuff like that in the virtual world, right? But when they bring them into the 3D world, doesn't physics have to apply? Like, how are these things floating around and flying if they're not using aerodynamics and, anyway, so that's the first thing. And secondly, what do these guys eat to survive? Right. Anyway, the story happens in matter of hours. It wasn't like from beginning to end. It wasn't like they were around, but there is potential that one of the characters will live on in the real world. Right. So how, like, again, do they poop?
Yeah.
Just do some cubes. Cubes.
Yeah, I'm not sure the real Jared Leto poops, so I'm not sure about the fake one either.
I gotta say, I've seen Jared Leto in a number of shows, and he can be. I mean, like, especially in Suicide Squad and in Blade Runner, he was like really out there. He was really grounded in this one, as Jared Leto performances go. This was a really good one. I enjoyed him as a character, and Greta Lee. She plays one of the main human scientists. She's great. I mean, she's in the morning show. She's the one that was in the Oneer on the studio.
Oh yeah.
She was the actress, right?
Yep.
So she's not hard on the eyes and nope. And can play a really smart person, right? Sort of thing, right? So and then, of course, Jeff Bridges does show up. The dude is actually in the show. And they do a really good job of tying the 2025 Tron with the 1980s Tron. Right? Like, it turns out that the Ares character is a big fan of Duran Duran. Go figure. But anyway, there's a spoiler there, but I'm not going to talk about that too much. But yeah, so it is good because the way they work in the 80s version of Tron, the way they work in the Jeff Bridges character, the way they, the way they have this sort of like, how do they manifest them in the real world? And then what happens when, obviously characters get sucked into the grid as well, right? And it's, in terms of storyline and plot and things like that, first of all, it's a great movie to watch because it's hold my beer while I eat my popcorn kind of thing, or get the big gulp, like Hemi would say, right? Definitely, if you can see it in 3D IMAX, 100% recommend that, because then you get the IMAX sound, and the Nine Inch Nails soundtrack is like just killer, right?
Yeah, that's my only disappointment in the, I thought about, like, should I make an effort to go to actually see this at like the IMAX in Moncton, or at least one of the bigger theaters in Fredericton or St. John, because it seems like one of those big screen, big sound kind of movies. But I kind of want, I'm somewhere around maybe just buying the soundtrack and waiting to see the movie on Disney Plus.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this definitely the obviously it's going to come out on Disney. But even do the Tron version. You know how they have the Tinkerbell comes out and tings her wand, and you know they have the little rainbow thing over the castle. They Tron the Disney castle, right? Like these lasers come up and they're like, it's like a rock show where they're like panning up and down, and they're, you know, the big red lasers and stuff like that. And then as the lasers kind of split, you see the castle in the background, and then the letters kind of flicker in like they do in like Neon, where they're kind of like jumping on and off. And they do a good, even the Disney trademark at the beginning is super cool, right? So and to be honest with you, like, I'm looking at this going, well, yeah, I have the Vision Pro here. It's going to come out on Disney in like, what, 45 days, I mean, is that what we say? Yeah, I could wait, right? But, and of course it would be in 3D because Disney is very good about putting stuff on 3D. On the Vision Pro, I mean. So I could wait. I mean, and I'm not a huge Tron fan. I'm okay. I didn't see the movie in the 80s when it first came out, but friends of mine are like obsessed with it, right? And then the Tron Legacy was okay. His movies goes, I probably gave it like three, maybe 3.5 stars if it was a good day, if I was feeling good. But this one I would give 4 stars to for sure.
Okay.
Like it's up there with the Marvel, you know, kind of, it's very entertaining. It's a world, you know, kind of thing in a sense.
Do you feel like, did you watch either of the Tron movies before you went in? Do you feel like that people need, like, I think I've only seen Tron Legacy twice. I don't know that I remember it well enough to be like, oh, of course, that's a continuation of the blah.
No, I mean, you know, maybe if you hadn't seen, like, I think the thing is, like, the 80s version of the movie, right, is you wanted those light cycles. They were animated. They were like hand-drawn kind of animations, right? Here they look hand-drawn, but CG, and the visual effects are very clean, very polished, very 3D 2025 IMAX kind of quality, but they've got that sort of drawing rendered 80s look to them. Right, like when they're sending the Jared Leto character and he has to go and do something in the 80s version, and when they send him in, he says, any advice, and they just sort of said, think 80s. And he gets there and he lands and he goes, yep, 80s. He just looks around and it's like, you know, like the computer, the grid on the floor is kind of like the you know, the old school kind of computer graphics stuff, right? I actually was delighted by the rendering of the 80s version. I thought it was really cool. Like to see that in 3D and IMAX and stuff like that, right?
Cool.
Yeah. And so the last thing I got with you is sort of a follow-up. It's Wayward. Jonathan asked us last week, is anybody watching Wayward? And I thought it was a movie. So I sat down. You sucked me in. So I sat down and watched it and watched, you know, obviously it's not, it's like, I think it's 8 episodes. It's a limited series, they say. I don't know what that means. But it's pretty good. I mean, it's a little bit like Gen V, because it's a bunch of kids in this sort of weird school. I think it's more like a reform school, but it's very culty because who's the lady who plays the main character from Sixth Sense?
Oh,
the Australian.
I know who you mean, the one from Hereditary.
She's like the leader person, leader woman, right?
Toni Collette.
She plays this like, you know, off the wall thing, but it's more centered around the kids, right? There's a couple of girls who are from Canada who get, and it's in Vermont somewhere, right? And then the other side of the story is that Mae Martin, who created the show and acts in it, has moved there with their wife, and they're about to have a baby, and they've been put up by this leader of the cult in this nice house, because the wife apparently used to, which we find out in a couple of episodes later, was a graduate of the school. So to help them, you know, they've gone through some sort of crisis, and the Mae Martin character is a police person who's joined the local police force, and she discovers kind of weird things going on and starts asking questions. And it's kind of like, telling Jonathan before we started recording, it's a bit like Get Out when he arrives at he finally gets to go to the girlfriend's house and meet the mother and all that kind of stuff, the Parker Posey character and all that kind of stuff. How it turns out to be this sort of weird, everybody's in on that kind of thing. So it's that kind of weirdness. I don't know. It's dark in moments. It's trippy in moments. It's culty in moments, but it's not, I wouldn't call it a horror movie. I think you could probably watch it, Jonathan.
Okay.
That was your big question from last week, right?
Yeah. Well, again, as we talked about, this is based on a popular, more culty kind of comic book that was published by Image Comics. And that's why it kind of intrigued me, because I knew that there was a following for the series. So I wasn't sure how that would translate. But I'll put that one higher up the radar.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's not really... because right now we're getting a lot of Halloween stuff, right? So because we're getting into the horror and, like all the trailers at the IMAX were like for Wizard Part 2, which, by the way, wasn't in 3D. I was really surprised to see they showed that trailer. Hmm. It showed The Bride is coming out,
Bride of Frankenstein remake kind of thing.
Yeah. So that looks, I like the two actors in that. That's the dude from Christian Bale and the lady, I can't remember her name, but she's really good. I've seen her in a few shows. And what else did they show? Oh, and they showed the Avatar in the new Avatar movie in 3D, which looks really good in 3D IMAX, I gotta say, right? But they didn't tell us to put our glasses on. So we're watching it and kind of going, that's an interesting shot. And then all of a sudden you see, like, I think half the audience realized when you started seeing two of the same actor, you're kind of like, oh, I got to put my glasses on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was cool. So yeah, it was a good time. So, but Wayward, yeah, I definitely would give Wayward a thumbs up.
Cool.
It's a bit Stranger Things too. Like, I guess another sort of feeling of it.
Cool.
Yeah. Over to Jaime.
Yeah, I've got a. It's an 8 years ago, YouTube video, but it still holds up pretty well. Although people in the chat have some minor modifications. So it is entitled How to Make a Blockbuster Movie Trailer. So this is going to be a little bit challenging. It is mostly audio, but you kind of need the text to go along with it. And it sort of tells you, if you're looking to make a movie trailer, this is pretty much what you would do, right? The only sort of modification they say is like, well, for modern movies, even if they're serious movies, especially because of the MCU, you would probably have some sort of, joke at the very end. And that's the only thing they would add. But it's like, here's when you put your visual effects shots. Here is the, call to action of like, I can't do this thing. I think you're the one. You can do this thing. That sort of stuff is pretty, it's filled with tropes. Again, it'll make more sense if you all watch it. It's only like 2.5 minutes, but it's pretty fascinating how it fits so many movies. Like, watch this and then go watch like the Avengers Infinity War trailer, or go watch Avengers Age of Ultron and tell me that it doesn't fit nearly to a T the exact beat after beat of how you would make a 2.5 minute trailer. Yeah,
cool.
The sort of funniest slide here that is very meta is final credit information that appears just long enough to register but is too fast to actually read. Yep, seen that on TV a lot.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, I will land the plane here with just a pitch. So the sixth and final season of Solar Opposites is dropping on Hulu/Disney+ here in Canada on Monday. So if you want to see how that series lands, and I think I'm still a little behind. I have some episodes to catch up on, but... I've enjoyed everything that I've watched. It's a fun series, and I'm kind of curious to see how they landed, especially things like The Wall and some of the sort of ongoing adjacent stories. But I'm looking forward to seeing how they wrap this up, because it's been a fun ride. So yeah,
definitely a show that I watch like as soon as it comes on, kind of thing.
There you go, Monday. It's all yours.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
And next week I will have more time and I won't be traveling for work. So I'll watch something else.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if you want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
Oh, I'd try Blue Sky and Instagram. I'm at JPK News, or you can try me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime. people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Instagram as @devwithahair.
Okay, and my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, and I'm usually lurking on Blue Sky or Threads or Mastodon, and also on YouTube. But yeah, so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. If you have feedback or questions, you can get in touch with us on the website. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Yeah, I've actually been looking at buying a new a network storage system thing, right?
Yeah, Xavier has been plotting one for our new home for, I mean, he wanted one for a while now, but I told him I actually cleared off. I had an extra external drive that was, I think, 4 gigs or something. And I said, you can have that. He's like, oh, I think I can use that to build my thing. I'm like, all right, you go nuts, kid, whatever. He's like, oh, it's so easy now. You just do this and this and this, and you can build your own home server and you can access all your things and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, again, don't let me stand in your way. You go ahead, kid.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great outcome for me, as long as I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple of Mac Minis sitting underneath the stairs that used to be where all of my music got ripped to and all that stuff. But I mean, you know, now Apple kind of takes over all that stuff, right? If you have the Apple One or the music thing, they even though you have the songs, they just serve it off their servers, right? So
yeah, I don't like that, but you know.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention too. I think Plex is another way to do.
Yeah.
Is to have home streaming stuff, right?
So, yeah, I think that's what Xavier was talking about.
But I like this approach this guy was talking about because I mean I've got like drawers full of movies I even have a Blu-ray player here, but I just don't put discs in and watch discs, right? So
I actually I was very very happy about a month ago. There's a box set, a DVD box set of a TV show that I was always a fan of that has been way out of print. I don't know if you remember it, Tim, but there was a show in the late 80s called It's Gary Shandling Show.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine's on that.
Very, very meta, very groundbreaking show. He was breaking the fourth wall. He was really pushing the envelope. I'm a big fan of Gary's and always was, loved him. And that show was on Fox before Fox was even a network. And I think it was either Shout Factory or Rhino put out a box set of the entire run 20 years ago. And they had the rights for a short while and they didn't. And so if you go looking on places like eBay, it's like $250 if you want to buy the box set. I happened to be going through the Facebook marketplace for Fredericton and somebody was selling one for a lot less than $250. So I picked that up. But you're right. I bought it and I'm like, this is awesome. I've always wanted this. I want to watch this series again, but I'm still like, oh, I have to get up and put a disc in the player. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. Yeah. We've gotten so lazy. Streaming is ruining us.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, you're right. Like if it was within the, you know, a simple thing of like, hey, I bought this new box set, I'm going to rip the whole thing, put it onto my home server, and so I can just sit there and binge episodes, I would do that, even though that's even harder than what I'm talking about. I would still do that, which is so silly. All right, I'm going to bounce because I have to be up in about 7 hours, so not even.
Okay.
So Yeah, luckily I'm staying at the Hilton here in Fredericton, which is literally like 25 steps from the venue in which I am working this week. So as far as commutes go, I can't really complain. And yet the 6:45 wake up calls come pretty darn early. So I did get to meet Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire today. That was pretty cool.
Right, yeah.
And it's been a really cool learning experience and meeting lots of interesting people and talking about how to keep people safe and healthy here. So I can't complain about any of that, but I'm looking forward to going home and sleeping in my own bed soon.
All right. Well, we'll hang it up here. Okay. All right.
All right. Jaime, you think of something good for our bet, and good luck to your Mariners.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Later.
Okay. Right, bye. Bye.